Good morning, and I hope you're all in good shape for yet another theory talk, so especially like this is for the empiricists. But well, I can reassure you, so I'm just a population geneticist, so this will be much easier than these evolutionary ecology talks. So no niches to start with, right? So not this vague concept, so almost trivial ecology. Also, the genetics is quite simple. All right, so as you probably know, there's not a lot where people could agree on in speciation theory, but maybe one thing that people would agree on is that at least some of the speciation events do happen in allopatry. And if this occurs, speciation in allopatry, then this mechanism, post-zygotic isolation due to accumulation of Dobzhansky-Muller incompatibilities, is a viable way to go. So here are the two fathers of this theory. Actually, Alan Orr thinks that already Bateson got it. Others disagree, so I just stick with these two, right? And, of course, you all know here this scheme. So we have an ancestral population that then splits into subpopulations in an allopatric phase. And then we need basically two substitutions, so either one substitution in each, at an A locus in one population and the B locus in the other population. And later when they come back together again, then they find out that the capital A and the capital B, these two substitutions, they don't like each other, and so there's an incompatibility. The hybrids have deficiencies, right? So alternative that these two substitutions can also happen subsequently in one of these subpopulations. All right, so this is the allopatric, standard allopatric speciation model, I would say. And there's a well-carved-out theory for this, mainly due to Alan Orr and also due to Michael Torelli. You probably all know the snowball effect that plays an important role there. But already, like Ulf said in his introduction, obviously, so allopatry is like the end of a scale. It's an extreme end of a scale, right? And it's maybe like a bit not so clear whether how much strict allopatry we have, right? Because already very low levels of gene flow can change the picture quite dramatically. Like population geneticists always say that already a single migrant per generation turns a subdivided population in something that much more looks like a panmictic population already. So very low levels of gene flow are sufficient to make a difference here. And therefore, so it's a quite natural question to ask. So this mechanism that we all like and think that it works in allopatry. So how does this work if we have gene flow, right? And then, I mean, that's a very surprising thing, I thought, that, there's almost no theory available, like, to deal with this case. So how does this standard mechanism of speciation stand up if we allow for just a little bit of gene flow? So this is how we could ask this question here. So this is the question of my talk here. Can Dobzhansky-Muller incompatibilities originate and or be maintained in the presence of gene flow? And we can ask this the following way. What are the limiting rates of gene flow we could allow for that it still works? And we will address this question depending on a number of model parameters. We discuss here the influence of ecological factors, for example, heterogeneous selection across space, local adaptation, these kinds of things. We discuss genetic factors, strength of the incompatibility and the recombination rate between these two loci that are involved, and also the evolutionary history will play an important role, the order of the substitution events in this model that I will describe will make a difference. All right, so this is the model. Actually, I have two versions of this model, and this is really now the very, very most simple-minded one you could come up with to start with, right? It's a haploid model, haploid continent and island model. So that means here's the genetics. We have two loci, two alleles at these loci, small a, the ancestral ones, capital A and B, the derived ones. There's recombination at rate R between these loci, and we only allow for unidirectional migration in this case from the continent to the island, here the continent, here the island, at rate M. And then, yeah, you may imagine here that, like here, substitution happens on the continent, and subsequently here, this substitution happens here on the island, and we will then ask, under which conditions are both of these substitutions maintained in the system and not swamped due to migration somehow? I've said this is the haploid model, first of all. So this is a really very, very simple fitness scheme here. And we have the wild type with a fitness normalized. So this is growth rate or log fitness, like you're normalized to zero, without any restriction of the generality. And then we have an ecological selection pressures on all these single substitutions. And here I should say, these are just the fitness values on the island, because, I mean, in the end, we will only need to discuss the dynamics on the island. The continent is kind of trivial. This is the fitness coefficient of the continental allele on the island, beta, which may be positive or negative. This is the fitness coefficient of the island allele on the island, which usually then will be positive or neutral maybe. And then we have here a parameter gamma that measures the strength of the incompatibility, right? So this is an epistasis parameter, like in a formal population genetic terms, gamma measures the strength of the Dobzhansky-Muller incompatibility. All right, so this is the haploid model, but then we also go on to discuss the diploid case. I mean, same genetics, just diploid. And here we have the following fitness scheme on the island with this 3 by 3 table here, and the main difference now is that we have not only one, but we have four different epistasis parameters which collectively measure the strength of this Dobzhansky-Muller incompatibility, right? So gamma 1 measures the deficiency of the double heterozygote, and then there's some gamma 2, gamma 3 that measure deficiencies in the mixed homo-heterozygotes, and there's also the double homozygote, which gets, the full power of this incompatibility and should have a quite large deficiency, gamma 4, here. I mean, it's reasonable, biologically reasonable, to assume that this gamma 1 should be smaller than gamma 2 or 3 somehow, and these, in turn, should be smaller than the gamma 4. All right, should still comment a bit on different evolutionary histories that we might discuss here. So this was the one we had on the slide before even. So this means, again, assume there has been some ancestral population, then the split, but there's still like migration going on. And one evolutionary history then would be that we have the substitution on the continent first, and subsequently here, the second substitution on the island. And I call this the continent-island scenario. But then we could also have it the other way around, that we have the first substitution here going on the island, and the second one then here on the continent, which would be the island-continent scenario. And then could also discuss the cases where actually both of these substitutions happen in one of these subpopulations, and then we need to turn these genotype scheme a bit around, that now in the ancestral population here, for example, in this continent-continent scenario, we have the capital A, small b genotype as the ancestral one, and then subsequently both of these substitutions happen on the continent. I do this because then in this case, like sort of today, where we end up, we have the same scenario here, where we have small a, capital B, flowing into the island where then all the four haplotypes may occur there on the island. So this is just the same as here. Then we can describe all these cases in the same modeling scheme. And finally, I mean, this is the island-island scenario. And as you see, we just here need to start with the small a, capital B as our ancestral type, and then have these two substitutions on the island, and again, get the same scheme where we end up with. So in all these cases, right, we eventually just describe the dynamics on the island, right? And these happen to be the dynamical equations here, so don't matter the details. We always have here, so this is very like a projected, simplified representation of the genotype space, where we have this pure haplotype phases in the four corners, and then we would have like migrational inflow to the island from the continent here from that corner, and we have different starting points, initial conditions for our problem that then describe the different evolutionary histories that we have. And for example, I think I did not have this one as a picture before. You can also discuss the secondary contact, that I mean initially we are fixed for the island haplotype on the island, and then we get like so inflow from the continental type, then we would start up here. And then actually, if you work out the details a bit, you see that the island continent type and the continent continent type, so all the cases where the second substitution happens on the continent, lead to the same starting condition, that we start somewhere around here. And the other ones, continent island or island island, lead to yet another starting condition where we start somewhere around here. And we always ask, where does evolution take us? And does it take us to an equilibrium that is somewhere here in the middle, where we maintain all the four haplotypes? And I will call these cases where we maintain the Dobzhansky-Muller incompatibility, right? All right. So don't comment a lot on really our maths here, just like a little bit. This is a combination of analytical results where we do usual classical stability analysis of the system. We also worked on several types of what's called Lyapunov functions for global convergence. And then, like in several limiting cases, you can use perturbation theory to gain a few more results from that. And this then is complemented, as we always do, is by numerical analysis of the cases where we do not have an analytical handle. And as I said before, what we aim for is equations, formulas, or at least numerical results for limiting migration rates for stable DMIs, right? And for the haploid model, indeed, almost everything can be worked out analytically. For the diploid model, only some, although interesting cases, limiting cases can be worked on analytically, but we still get a full numerical overview, I would say. First result already here. I mean, in all these models, we get at most a single stable DMI, a single stable internal equilibrium in formal mathematical terms here. So which either can be globally or locally stable. So, and yeah, already should say this, that, yeah, I mean, if this is globally stable, right, so this means that it would evolve independently of the initial conditions, right? Whether we start here or here or here, we always would get to this one equilibrium. And also we have this result, which is quite convenient, that if it's locally stable, we have a, in all these cases, there's a nice split that we always will evolve still to the Dobzhansky-Mahler incompatibility from this and this initial condition, right? Secondary contact and these cases where we have the second substitution going on the continent, but never from this initial condition where the second substitution is on the island. All right, now let's have a look at like what kind of results do we get. First important result is if we first have a look at what we call neutral Dobzhansky-Mahler incompatibilities. That means these substitutions that are happen due to evolution, origination of the Dobzhansky-Mahler incompatibility are both neutral, right? Then we find that this is never ever stable if we have any even very tiny small rate of gene flow, right? Now this is an analytical result that we get for the haploid model, and it's only we have partial analytical results there for the diploid model. Like if you think that this is obvious anyway, then this is a small challenge for the theoreticians in the room to get a general proof for the diploids. I mean, we have not succeeded yet to find one, right? All right, and maybe I should also say we have done some also simulations, including drift and everything, and yeah, it really shows that even for very tiny rates of gene flow, this completely neutral case, it's quickly swamped. We don't maintain a Dobzhansky-Mahler incompatibility without positive selection. Now, for adaptive DMIs, so the ones that do involve adaptations, we have like a classification that I would like to start with here that goes back to Dolph Schlüter. It's a Science Perspective article 2 years ago, where he classifies parapatric speciation. What I'm talking here about is not really speciation. I mean, it's the origination of a first Dobzhansky-Mahler incompatibility. So the very, very, very first step that may end up in speciation in the long run, right? But, all right, so Schlüter here talks about speciation and classifies this into two cases that he calls ecological speciation and mutation order speciation. So I will explain you what that is. Schlüter says, ecological speciation, this is the thing that can happen or happens for if you have local adaptation, right? So if this island substitution, obviously like this has positive fitness, but here the continental substitution on the island has negative fitness, right? So this is the classical heterogeneous selection case, local adaptation, and this then should result in globally stable DMIs, so this is now my terminology, so it should always result in stable incompatibilities if we have this situation. And then there's an alternative to this ecological speciation that he calls mutation order speciation, and this should be something that works for global adaptation. So when actually both of these substitutions, alpha and beta, both these fitness values are positive on the island, right? And then he says it depends on the stability of such an incompatibility depends on the mutation order. So we have some historical contingency in this case, which of course is an interesting distinction to this ecological situation that we have here. So for our case, as I said, it should result in locally stable DMIs that we get from here and here, but not from here. And now, one point of models definitely is, I mean, to maybe sharpen these kind of verbal definitions that we have already in the literature and see how they stand up and see how they hold up if we do at least like a very simple model here. All right, so this is what we find. First, for the case of linkage equilibrium, so very high recombination rates among these two loci. Let's discuss this first. And here, this is the local adaptation scenario, beta smaller than zero, alpha larger than zero. This is the global adaptation scenario where both parameters are positive. What we see here is the maximal rate of gene flow that we can digest here and here. And on this axis, this is the strength of the incompatibility here. We have two lines here. This is dark shaded part. This is the globally stable part. And here we at least have a locally stable equilibrium, right? And what we already see here is that also for local adaptation, right? So we do not only get global stability, but we also get a range of local stability here. So it's not really true that local adaptation always leads to globally stable cases. Also there, the mutation order may matter. And therefore, it's not such a good idea to call this case here mutation order speciation if we have alpha and beta, both parameters larger than zero. Anyway, I mean, mutation order is not really the mechanism that is behind the stability of the DMI here, but rather what is the mechanism is that we have selection against hybrids here. I mean, here we have direct heterogeneous selection against the incoming haplotypes here. So this is the reason here. We could call this ecological speciation. That's okay. And we can have selection against hybrids here. This is the true cause here in this case. Yeah, maybe should have said. So this is first the haploid model to start easy again here. Now, if we compare these two cases, one interesting thing that we see is that for this heterogeneous selection case, we actually have a negative dependence of this limiting rate on the strength of the incompatibility. So it's easier to maintain very weak incompatibilities than strong incompatibilities. It's opposite in this case, where really the thing depends on selection against hybrids. Of course, I mean, then that should be strong. Also, we have an opposite dependence here on linkage, right? Now, what's this? You know, we turn on linkage, if you want, right, from 0 to 100. 100 is basically linkage equilibrium. These are rates in continuous time, so yeah, don't get confused. We can go beyond 0.5 in this case, right? And yeah, what we see here, the black thing is basically what we had before, and this is for lower recombination rates, the other colors here. We see that for increased linkage, these maximal rates go up here for the heterogeneous selection case, and here they go down for selection against hybrids, because in the haploid case, these hybrids are only formed by recombination, right? And now we can ask, of course, that's fine. Yeah. what happens in the diploid case? Because, I mean, haploids are really only a bit of a toy model here. And interesting thing, if you compare this here and there, so there's almost no difference, qualitatively really very much the same, as long as we talk about recessive Dobzhansky-Muller incompatibilities in the diploid case. So that means there's no selection against the double heterozygotes. This gamma 1 is 0, right? So basically the same picture here. But this we see here, right? Things change quite dramatically if we now turn on selection against the double heterozygotes, right? And two things that we see here in the first place, if we compare this and this, is that we get a lot more parameter space where we only have local adaptation. Maybe I should have said this. These filled areas are global stability. These areas below the lines and above the filled parts here are local stability. We get a lot more local stability where it really depends on mutation order, right? Even for this case, if we have now diploids with selection against the double heterozygote. And here, in this case, where we have this global adaptation case, the order with recombination against reverses. I mean, we've seen this, and we have here, again, the order that we have stronger, we can go to higher rates with higher recombination rates, but again here, like if we go to very strong Dobzhansky-Muller incompatibilities, it changes again, and we again get this picture that's most stable for tightly linked loci. So with this, let me just sum up our results. First result, as I've said, we have no neutral DMIs with gene flow. And this is something that actually nicely fits also to some of the data, at least for Drosophila, all these hybrid incompatibility loci that we know now, so also show signs of positive selection if we look at selective sweeps in the data. We indeed find two mechanisms for stable DMIs in parapetry, just like Dolph Schlüter did in his classification, but we have this classification like a little bit differently here. So call this heterogeneous selection. For heterogeneous selection, so we often, but not always, have globally stable cases where it not depends on historic contingency. Often weak Dobzhansky-Muller incompatibilities are favored in this case, and we have tight linkage. So tight linkage is a good thing for stability of DMIs in this case. In the opposite case, where everything depends on hybrid deficiency, so selection against hybrids, the mutation order is always important, actually. Always strong Dobzhansky-Muller incompatibilities are favored. And in very many cases, we then have loose linkage, right? Not tight linkage, but the strongest gene flow rates can be digested with loose linkage. And maybe this is a bit of a surprise because everybody thinks, these should be tightly linked, maybe within inversions and everything, right? Should say that this, of course, like is the picture we had for the haploid case or for diploids without, for the diploid recessive case, for diploids with costs for the double heterozygotes, which is really a very important parameter, I should also say, then we get these deficient hybrids most strongly, again, with tight linkage, so they're the order for recombination rates against reverses. All right, and then, obviously, right, still this was just some initial steps that we did. There's a lot more work to do. We need to understand the case of two islands where we have migration in both directions for X-linked GMIs, genetic drift, and all sorts of cases, maybe small snowball effects in parapetry. So there's a lot of work still to do. With this, I will just thank my collaborators. This is really part of the PhD project of Claudia Bank. And my direct colleague, Reinhard Bürger, is also a collaborator on this work. Thanks to you for listening. Yeah.
Well, I think it's time for one question. You up?
I have two questions. First, I think I know the answer is you don't know, because you said it's outlook. I would wonder what happens along a gradient of populations, not island continent, when each population differ in a little bit difference in the selection, or the fitness would be gradually different, but it would be dramatic difference between the two sides of the gradient. I guess that something to work out?
Yeah, simple yes. Yeah, so I don't dare to, predict anything so without doing the calculations here. We already found some surprises with this very simplistic case. Yeah, so, it's an important scenario to also consider this in continuous space. Yeah. Analytically, right, so it's even more difficult. Numerically, you can do a lot, right? Yeah.
And my second question, again, if you have an intuition, what would happen if there is any sort of, any level of inbreeding depression. So there'll be a little bit higher fitness for recombinant.
Well, I mean, I don't know. So I'm, I don't think that I have a better intuition on this than everybody else. So you would think so if there's some inbreeding depression, so this should favor migrants that come from the outside. So it should make it more difficult. So then to maintain these Dobzhansky model incompatibilities. So this is. This would be my guess, right? Yeah. Thanks.